Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to Blog Talk Radio Scan Show Stop Child Abuse Now, number 2441. NASCA has a single purpose, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts and showing childhood abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second is offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I am Linda Vitti, an advocate, counselor, and life coach from New Jersey, and I will be your host for this evening. So welcome. We encourage you to call in and be part of our panel. The call-in number is 646-595-2118. Again, it's 646-595-2118. And tonight, our special guest is Raquel Millett from Westland, Michigan, a survivor who was raped by her teacher, assistant principal in a high school. Raquel states, "During the abuse, he became my godfather, and he viewed me as his daughter. It actually got to a point where I was calling him dad, and he would introduce me to others as his daughter. His family were my family, and I trusted him with my whole heart. We were very close, but I didn't realize that was part of the grooming process." Oh, yes. "I trusted him. I was fearfully silent and determined to take the secret to my grave. However, I was suffering from it greatly and went to college chaplain at the time to ask for possible counseling services and resources for college. I did not know when I spoke out for advice that he was going to have, that I was going to have to be reported. Yes, I immediately regretted it and held that regret for a period of years." I can totally relate to that. That was probably my biggest regret, is when I first told and got the response that I got, and it was very difficult. So without further ado, I am going to bring on our special guest, Raquel. Did I say your name correctly?
Yes. Yes, you did. Perfect.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure. This is how we're going to go. I'm going to let you tell your story for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to go to the panel and let them ask questions, and then we'll go back to your story, and we'll do that for the hour and a half.
Okay.
Sounds good.
I'll let you take it away. Okay. I'm going to say thank you so much for me being able to come on, be able to share my story. I just hope that it'll be able to provide education as well as even encouragement to whoever is listening. However, I grew up in a Christian home with my parents and my brother. And growing up is kind of like, I was never really taught really about abuse. I would more so would think about the stranger danger. You got to watch out for the people who you don't know, because right. those are the ones who are able to hurt you. So in my mind, I grew up very naive, not really thinking anything. I went to a Christian school all my life outside of college years, and I believe people who believe in God, it's like they believe in God, this stuff would never happen. It's like right. I never expected yeah. this to happen to me. It's like something which you just hear or you watch in a movie, like in a horror movie. It's like you never, ever expect or imagine this to happen. I never knew anybody. But it did take place. When I was 15 is when the grooming process took place. And first, I was going to a new school at the time. The academy, which I was attending previously, they were closing and they were starting to end their grades up into the 9th grade. So I had to go to another school for the 10th grade. It was considerations to go to like a public school, go to a different school. However, I was like, okay, well, since I already had a Christian education pretty much all my life, let me just continue to follow suit. So we did that. Looking back now, I wonder if I went to a different school. It's like maybe this never would have happened. But I went there, and everyone was very friendly. It was a very small school, an academy, maybe 100-something students from pre-K to 12th grade. In my class, my graduating class, only five females and two males in my class. So it's very, very small. Out of all the teachers in the school, only two male teachers. One was my abuser, who was also the assistant principal, was also very involved in the church. He was known in the community, different colleges that I was also wanting to go to as well. He was known. He was looked upon as having a heart of gold. And I remember the first day going to school. Of course, everybody's nervous, of course, the first day. But I remember going in, not knowing anyone, went to the homeroom, and he was in there. And then that's when he introduced himself. But then he asked me, he was like, have you ever been in gymnastics? And it was my first time ever seeing him, first time meeting him. And I was like, yeah, I used to be a gymnast. And then I was like, why you're asking? And then he was like, because I can tell you have a body like a gymnast. In my mind, I was like, this seems kind of weird. It seems very strange. But I was like, well, maybe he's just someone who's a bold speaker, would just say whatever is in their mind. And I was like, once again, he's a Christian. This can never happen. Uh-huh. So I just ruled everything out, and I just ignored it. So he didn't teach any of my classes. He was just my homeroom teacher that year. But as I was there for 3 years at the school, but especially but in my second year, my 11th year, I was 16 when I was there. That's when the physical actually began. It began with, first, my dad was not physically living with us at that time. My parents weren't divorced, but they were living in different areas due to work and stuff like that. Time my mom and I, we were homeless. We were living with someone else in their home. And he knew that I did not like living there because I started connecting. He got close to my parents, to my brother, and we started connecting. So he knew I was not fond of my environment where we were living. So he found a void, and then he filled it. He found a need, and then he filled it. Whatever was wrong, he would make sure to be there, to be that source of strength, of hope, of encouragement, of love. And I became friends and family with his family. His parents called me their granddaughter. His children knew me as their sister, just living in a different home, and that's it. And over time, it just started. He was like, I started calling him dad, and he started introducing me to other people as a such. And then even in school, it just started to him. We were starting texting, and then he would text me telling me to come meet him in different places of the school. And then that's when stuff would happen. And I would go because I was like, okay, we are in school. If I don't go, he's an assistant principal as well. And that around this time, he became my teacher. And he's my master teacher. So I also thought, okay, if I don't listen to him, he can try to turn something to make it seem as if I'm the one who's trying to hit on him. And then it messes me up. And then I get in huge trouble for it, expelled or lawsuit or whatever. So I was like, okay, I have to just go along with it. So I did. But he would text me sometimes in school. He would have me bring me to other classrooms. And it just continued to advance. And during that time, my mom was very sick. She had kidney problems. And we were told that if she did not go to the hospital when she did, she went on the Friday, she did not go to the hospital by that weekend, by that Monday, she would have been dead. So it was like even that in itself was just adding so much stress. And I didn't want to tell anything to my parents because it's like I'm trying to figure it out because it's like
somebody who I trusted
and there's so much stress happening. I didn't want to say anything. And plus, I was trying to understand it because he would tell me, this is how I show my love to you. This is how I show my love. I love you. This is what I do. I don't know anything else. This is what I do. And I remember asking, this was years later, I said, okay, so you have a daughter, and you say, I'm your daughter. Would you also do this to her as well? He never answered that question. And honestly, that's so haunting to this day. He told me he had never done anything.
Did that make you curious when he didn't answer that question?
It did. It did. Very, very curious. It still does.
I'm going to stop you there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you finish that, and then we're going to go to the panel. So finish that sentence up.
Okay. Because she is now the age, I want to say she is turning 17. She'll be turning 17, I want to say, in a couple of months. And she is the same age when I was being abused by him. So it truly I remember him telling me he would rather go to hell than for people to know what is happening. He said he would deny anything whatsoever. So it's like those thoughts and those words that he said, it's like it's still in my mind. It's like always made me wonder, did I do enough? Did I do enough?
Wow. That is so the daughter now, his daughter now is the same age you were when it started.
Well, not when it started. Right now she's 17. When it physically began with me, I was 16. When this grooming began, I was 15. So she's turning 17, I guess, in a few months. The son is 18 already. He'll be 19 next year. So with I don't know. I'm like waiting until they get of age because it's like I want to be, I was looking to see if I can find them on Facebook or something when they get 18 because I want to be able to reach out and be like, are you okay? Did something else happen? Did something happen?
Wow. Well,
because
well
the
let's
wife
go to the panel. Good. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it's hard on the radio. Sometimes we talk over each other. So go ahead, finish out your thought.
Okay. He told his wife that it was an affair, so I can only imagine what his children. No.
Oh, man, an affair, and he called you his daughter. That's unbelievable.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to go to Joe, my co-host in Oregon, and see if she has any feedback.
Okay.
Hi. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about parents who try to protect their kids and saying, oh, you know, it's a wonderful world out there. And if as long as people are, you know, have faith and have their faith and that everything will be good and how you weren't prepared for that. And he saw right through that. He saw right through that and how to get to you. Wow. But I was also thinking, what a great question to ask him. Do you treat your other daughter that way? And wow. So this is sort of a wake up for me about parents who get overprotective and not really helping. Helping you at all by that way. So I'm interested in hearing more. So, and you're doing a great job. You're really explaining everything really well. I'm interested in hearing more from you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It has been. Oh, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
My turn or? Oh,
yes. Yep, your turn.
So it has been definitely been a journey. It has truly been a journey. I remember because some things he would try to, he would not mind other people knowing, like we're together, but it came to the point where his wife became suspicious of, like, how come you're talking to her so much? Because he normally, he told me he would never really text, but he was texting me, like, throughout the day, sometimes even at nighttime, like, every single day, several times, conversations. And he would try to go outside, even to the car, or just delay appointments to be able to talk to me. And it came to the point where the wife was getting suspicious, and she would even come to me saying, how about we do stuff all together? How about this all together, not just you and the husband? And he would tell me as well that she was coming to him, and he would just say, okay, yeah, that's fine. We can do it both, but I also want to spend time with her as well because she's also my daughter. She's going to be going to college soon. I'm not really going to be seeing her much. So he would make it a point to have family time, which means all of us, his kids, her, me, and him, and also make it a point to do stuff with me. And then sometimes he would lie about it. Sometimes he would talk. I would hear the phone call. She would call him, and then he would say, yeah, I'm just doing this, or I'm just have to go to a few stores, doing some errands, doing some work. And then she would say, oh, okay, yeah, okay, so what time are you going to be back home? And then he would just say some the time, whatever. But she did not know I was also in the car with him, that we were together. So he would say, he would lie to make it seem as if he's just doing his own thing, but really, I'm also there as well. And even tell that to my parents sometimes, saying, yes, we're going to be the whole family. We're all going to be doing stuff together. Because I came to her, I remember my mom asking me one time, it was during college time, she asked me, did anything ever happen between the both of you? And I was like, no, nothing ever happened. Because I was like, I can't, this is going to be a secret I carry to the grave. I'm never going to say anything, because he told me he would deny it. He told me that he would go to jail to be a huge thing. And everybody will start to treat me differently. Everybody's going to know. So I'm not going to say anything. And I just did not say anything about it. And he would lie, saying that the whole family, to my parents, saying the whole family is together. But it wasn't the case. It wasn't the case at all. Many times it was just the two of us. Even it came to have, like, different, I don't want to call it anniversary, but I guess maybe you can call it like an anniversary, a certain time out of the year. Actually, in June, a certain date of June, there's a time where it kind of be like we celebrate both of our birthdays and like a relationship type of a thing. And that would be the whole day that we do stuff together. So we would do whatever. He knew I loved horseback riding, so he would take me horseback riding, the both of us. We would go to that together. We would go to these special places out to eat. He would get a hotel room, because hotel rooms were also involved during this time. He would get a hotel room. I remember one time, I just thought it was so weird, and just like a little red flag in my mind. All the stuff became red flags, but not in the beginning. In my mind, I was just still trying to figure all this out, because I kind of saw it like, this is a movie. This is not my life. But I remember one time in the hotel, got a sauna. There was like a jacuzzi, like right there in the middle of the hotel room. And I was like, this is very weird. This is very weird. So he just completely just became, he did not see anything wrong. Because even during college time as well, we were still communicating. I still felt like I was trapped in that type of relationship and that kind of situation. I couldn't really come out. And he was making plans to divorce his wife, telling me his plans of how to get it to that point where she's going to want to leave him. It would not make it seem as if it's a huge thing, to make it seem like his, whenever they have arguments, he's not really going to try to resolve it, because he's just trying to basically build up to the point where he will be able to say, yeah, I want to have a divorce, or she says that she wants to get a divorce. So was the plan with Mary. Now looking back, I'm like seeing it's because since he wants to be able to protect himself, because if there's like a marriage, then it'll be harder to say, oh yeah, she was actually being truthful. because how come right. she would have married me if I was right. actually abusing her?
Right.
But
right.
it is
okay,
just,
we have one more panel member to get to,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to get, I'm going to let you get completely back into your story. So thank you, Joe.
No
and
problem.
We're going to go to Pamela in Louisiana. Hi, Pamela.
Hi. Hi, Raquel.
Hi.
You're doing great. Is this your first time to tell your story?
On this type of format, yes, it is. My first time since speaking out, yes.
Well, don't be nervous. All of us are here for you to support you. I was victim of sexual abuse by my stepfather. And it, you know, the grooming that you went through was so subtle, you know. And did he ever threaten your life?
No, not so much like threaten my life. There's been times I would wonder if he would, because he would get super upset sometimes if I didn't do what he wanted, but not verbally. He would just say the repercussions of speaking out, how he's going to deny it, how my whole life was going to change, but not so direct.
Well, did you even know it was a crime of what he was doing to you? Did you realize it
no.
was a crime?
Not at all.
So
I just thought it was more so just an affair. I thought a crime, I thought maybe during, a crime, I would say maybe close to when I spoke out in college years, several years after.
Yeah.
I just thought it probably was upon it wrong.
Did you ever go to the police and tell them at all?
I did I went to the college chaplain, and then that's when it had to be reported. And during that process, I want to say that was in 2012, around the end of, 2013, like maybe January 2013 is when I had to report. I reported it to the police after my college chaplain said he had to report it to the school.
So did they open
but now
the
by choice.
Huh?
Yeah, they started an investigation, but then it started to get delayed and everything like that. They were saying that they have a murder cases they have to deal with, and I tried a couple of times later. Maybe I even tried like in 2017, because when I was in Florida and I used to live out there, it also took place there on a senior trip. So I tried out there, but then they said statute of limitations. So. It was a criminal statute of limitations that was exceeded, so nothing has happened to him, literally.
Have you tried to take him to civil court?
Not him personally. I was able to do the school. I was able to go to have a civil, but nothing. I have not tried against him. I have thought about it, but I don't really have so much the support of family to really try to pursue anything legally. So I'm sure if I did have support, that I probably would have tried to exhaust all of my options, because, as I was saying, my mind still goes back to his children. So that is where I
have
don't have support.
Have you been in therapy?
On and off. Sometimes it's never been as, sometimes I wish I can go longer, but it's just been on and off. Sometimes it's like the money is also there and as well. And when I had a different job, I had insurance, so not having that job. So I wish I could now, in case of anything, I go to like chat rooms.
Just one more question. Did the Me Too movement do anything for you? Did you
it was
feel
taking place then? So no, it wasn't taking place, and I never sought them out. Even after I tried again a couple of years ago, I did not really know what, I didn't know any options or resources that could come through them, so I didn't try.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
So you're doing great.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of get you up, get your you know, thinking going.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks. Great question, Pamela.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Raquel, how it affected your faith?
It was very difficult for me with my faith. For a while, I mean, during when I did speak out, I regretted it deeply because It was not my intention. When I went to my college chaplain, I just wanted to find counseling resources, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he called the academy right there in front of me, and I heard the principal's voice on the phone, and everything in my mind, it was like, what in the world? Because that weekend, he was supposed to come with his family to come visit me as well, but I did not want to see him at all. So I was like, okay, how do I go about this? I just want some counseling. So around that time, I attempted suicide. I got super depressed. I suicide. Just gave up on God because I was like, I don't understand God. How can you do this, allow this to happen? I was trying, but then I remember praying, and I was like, okay, Lord, if you have a purpose through this, please, if you're going to help me to get through this, then just help me to be able to wake up the next morning, because I remember taking a lot of different pills because I did not want to wake back up. So I was like, Lord, if you have a purpose, if you're going to help me through this, I'm going to wake up the next morning. And I woke up. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to be able to be here. You're going to be here with me. But it still was extremely difficult. I was not really eating. My grades started suffering. I was going to school then for pre-nursing, and my grades started suffering. I wasn't eating. During that time, I did take counseling while I was at the college. I was doing some sessions. During that time, it wasn't really helping. At that time, I guess it was really still, and I was still in shock because I'm like, what in the world is happening? Like, this is really going to become, the whole world is going to find out about this right now. And I was trying to figure out, okay, I have to try to get a lawyer. I got to try to figure out something. And after then, when I was able to get a lawyer, I got different lawyers, but then they were saying, okay, now I have an experience to deal with this. You should go contact this person, go contact this person. And then finally, I truly believe it was a blessing from God. Finally, I was able to get a lawyer, not criminally, but civilly, a lawyer that was able to represent some of Jerry Sandusky's victims, as well as Kevin Clash Elmo person. So I was just really thankful I was able to get somebody who specializes in abuse. And after they recommended out for me to just take some time off of school. So after that year there at school, I went back home and I took some time off, and I became very, very depressed. Very depressed. I came to a point of hating God, did not want to do anything to deal with church whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Did not want to hear anything about God. I let my parents know that because I knew that was going to be a whole other ordeal and just more stress that I did not want to deal with, because it was just already too much trying to adjust and then going through this whole type of lawsuit against the school and all these lawyers. And it's like, I've never been accustomed to it. So I just kept it secret that I gave up on God, but I was still trying to pray and still trying to read, just hoping it'll be something. But I just felt like he didn't love me anymore. I felt like he didn't care at all. So I was able to find like a church type of, I don't know, organization that did not believe in, say, going to the regular churches. And I got so engrossed into that, like heavy, heavy. And I literally just came out of it. Maybe actually last year I came out of that type of organization. And I was looking back and I was like, I wonder why I even joined it. My parents even said no. A lot of people were saying don't go into it. But I remember why I started to realize I chose it, because it was they were against the regular conference churches. And I was like, this is a conference church organization. They are the ones who do not protect me while I was in the school. And since they were against it, I also want to be part of them as well. So I was able to leave that last year. So I'm happy I was able to leave it. But I'm just now really starting to trying to come to my own knowledge of who God is myself,
and be able to have my own experience with.
Yes, that
I asked you that question because I know when I went through my abuse with my father, and I was going to church with my mother on Sundays, and then he would be abusing me at home after church.
Yeah,
it was like, how do you put that together? So I hated God for a long time until one night, you know, someone invited me to just try the Lord again and said, what do you got to lose? You've tried suicide. You've tried everything else. Mm-hmm. Why don't you just try God one more time? And I did, and it was that was the first day of my healing. And and so I'm glad that you're getting to that place, too. So, Finney, I want you to take that story however you want to take it. We have about an hour left, so wherever you want to go is perfectly fine.
Okay. So after I started to realize that it, even before I started to realize it was abuse, I started looking back. I was able to start to see how things are really thought out. How, because sometimes I would think like, okay, maybe abusers, they don't actually really know what they're really doing. It's more so like an accident of how things go and just play out. But I started to see it really is an accident. It is planned out because I noticed that he would plan things out with me in order to avoid being caught. And I also remember, he remember saying to me sometime, he was like, there are other people who would not, because sometimes he told me about maybe a couple of other teachers, female, who would ask him about me. And I was like, okay, so what are they asking? He would say they want to just ask about how come we're always together and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, so what did you say? And he was, oh, nothing wrong. I'm just saying, oh, yeah, she's just here, I'm helping her with homework and stuff like that. And I was like, well, okay. So it would be a few teachers that would ask questions. But sometimes it would just be me by myself at the school. So me, a female, him, a male, no one else is there. It's the end of the school day. And no one else is there. Then they say, oh, yeah. And people, the other teacher would ask me, so, oh, are you going with such and such? Is he taking you back home? And I'll be like, oh, okay, then yeah. But it's like there wasn't, so I'm sure the other teachers suspected something. I am positive they have known they do something. But never, none of them ever came to me asking me, hey, is everything okay? Is everything, they would go to him, but they never would come to me about anything whatsoever. And he would just still call me out sometimes, or still call me out. Sometimes I would come with a suitcase, not like a big suitcase, but it would still be another bag, a luggage bag outside of my regular school backpack, because I would be sleeping over the house the next day. And it would be very confusing, because he would rate me, say, on a Sunday night, and the next morning, Monday, he's there in the front of the classroom. It's just very confused to understand, and it's like I can't understand what's going on right now. Like, is this really real? It just did not seem real. He would try texting me, telling me to come here or to stay after a few minutes, and then he would go lock his office room, office door, or the classroom, and it was just very confusing. And I did not, because people have asked before, how come you didn't really know what was happening, because I was in complete shock. I was in complete shock about what was happening. I knew it was, I thought of it as well as like an affair. Yeah, he is a Christian. Yeah, he's married. He shouldn't be doing this, but nothing else. And I remember he told me before there were other people who would be fine with what he's doing. And I was like, what do you mean other people will be fine with what you're doing? I was like, who are they? He told me the other teacher, who's a male at this school, would be fine with it. And I was like, no, he was. But he said, of course, I was never going to ask him because, and at all, he actually passed away now. But he said he would believe it. He'll be fine with this. So my mind, when he said it, I was like, well, I guess really it's not that bad. It's not that serious. If other people would feel fine with it, even somebody who I know and respect, and so many people respect and loved that other teacher, it's like, then, and if he would be fine with it, not see an issue, then it must be me. Because I didn't know anybody personally who ever gone through anything like this. I didn't really have anything to speak to, anyone to speak to, to ask questions and to be able to share. And the thing is that there was another student who knew that we were pretty close, and but she did not tell her anything. And then we were kind of talk about how we did not really have, we were not so close with our biological dads, but how we had father figures. And one of the father figure was my abuser with me, and she was supportive. She did not know all the details, but still I felt like, oh, okay, because she was calling her father figure dad. And then I was, oh, okay, I can call him my father figure dad. So I just felt like it was fine, even though all of what was happening was not really spoken about. And then when we went on a senior trip, we went on a senior trip in 2010. He was, before we even went there, he was already, he made sure, he told me he's making sure he goes the trip. It was in, went to Disney World in Florida, and he was making certain that he was going to go on the trip, because there was also another teacher. There's two teachers that went. It was a principal that went and him that went. And there's another teacher that was supposed to go instead of him. But he made sure that he was going to be there. And that's what he told me. He wanted to make sure he have his time with me. And he told me that. And I was like, it's not going to happen. We can't do that. Nothing can happen. Then I was like, people are going to know. We're in a hotel. We're all going to be in rooms next to each other. And then he was like saying, don't worry about it. I'll figure it out. I'll make a way. And he did. There was like, we were there about for a week at Disney World in one of the hotels there. And he, we were always talking. So he's always text me and stuff like that. And then he texted me one time and then he said, okay, so come to my room. Then I was like, are you serious? Like right now? He was like, yeah, come to my room now. And then I like came over. And as soon as I did that, then he raped me while I was there. And I felt like I had to go, because it would, if I did not, and if I made him upset and if I didn't do something, he could easily turn it, because he's the assistant principal. He could easily turn it to make it seem as if this student here, she's doing this, she came to my room, even if I did not even go, but this, she did this, she's been doing this, and she's been doing this. So I felt like I had no choice, like I had to go. So then I went, and then that's what happened. I always felt, sometimes I was literally crying with him there, not he crying, but me crying there in his presence, because I was just, I could not believe what was happening. And I just wanted to stop, because literally came to a point where every single time we were together, there was always some type of sexual abuse taking place, to the point where I would have to just beg him, thinking, please just not do this right now. Can we not do this now? I remember lying, telling him I'm sick, telling him that I'm on my menstrual cycle, that I can't do anything, just so he wouldn't try to do anything. He would still try to do something, but he wouldn't try to actually try to have sex. So I was like, okay, that will try, that works. But it just became to be extremely, extremely stressful. I remember having headaches literally every single day. Literally going to sleep with a headache and literally waking up with headaches. 24/7 for a period of years. Going to the doctors and they're saying they don't know what's wrong. They're prescribing depression pills, antidepressant pills, and none of the stuff would work. They said I was healthy, everything was fine, but it was because so much stress. And I didn't know what to do. And it's like, people have asked, how come you didn't say anything? How come you didn't tell your family? How come you didn't tell anybody? And people say, oh, no, I wish you told me. And people have even said after, you know, I was suspecting something. I thought that something was happening, but I didn't really know. I wasn't too sure. And I was like, why didn't you come and even try to say anything? I mean, no one has even really come to me. No teachers has come to me after the fact. I remember one person, one of the teachers asked, a friend request on Facebook. My mind, I was like, that's weird. You're not saying anything to me, but you want to send me a friend request on Facebook. It's so strange. It's very strange.
I'm gonna stop you there, because we're gonna go to the panel again. It's been about 20 minutes since we went to Joe. So let's go to Joe in Oregon, my co-host.
Hi. Wow.
sort of, it's sort of like, sounds like a major entanglement type thing that you were in. And I'm amazed that you could hold up under that. I mean, the headaches were definitely an example of the stress that you were under. But now, was this before or after you talked to the priest? I mean, the counselor. This was still when you were
before.
In high school? Before.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why he was still involved. Okay, but I don't know. He really was intense.
Yeah.
Sounds like he was really, you know, it wasn't a casual thing at all. And he really had, wow. And, well, I do want to hear about the after effects of when you told the counselor and what happened then, because with that much with that much entanglement, I bet it was really hard to explain and to get any kind of compassion from people, you know. I'm so glad you made it through that, though. I kept thinking, wow, she's just really, you know, sort of almost strangled by that that connection. So thank you so much. You're doing a great job sharing this. I really appreciate you holding up under all of that. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about the resolution and how you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Okay, we're going to go to Pam in Louisiana.
Okay, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, you said this is pretty much the first type of platform that you've, been on as far as being on a radio show, I guess. But have you been at other platforms like, Have you thought about writing a book? Have you written, anything down as far as your experience?
So far, I have. Well, when I also spoke out, my attorney presented me with the offer to do an interview with it. It was around the whole time there was a lawsuit taking place. Maybe about in March, I want to say, I reported it to the authorities, the police, in January of 2013. So in March, my attorney told me about an offer to do an interview. It was with Detroit Free Press in Michigan, and then after that, it was reprinted in USA Today. So that's when it became more public to the world. Basically, people contacted me. So that was, the first time I actually really spoke out, in a sense, publicly. And then I have been connected to an organization, nonprofit organization called the Hope of Survivors. And that's really where I have been able to receive some of my support, just emailing back and forth. Somebody recommended them to me after they heard the story in the news. And that's where I have been able to also receive support over the years. And then I decided I also wanted to be able to help the victims as well. So now I am one of the individuals who also is one of the advocates as well, who's also helped with other victims or people who may be family, people who have been abused as well. So I provide support, currently working on my certification to become over the child and teen division of the organization in terms of abuse. I'm currently working on that. I do have another organization that is in the End It Now organization. There's plans to do an interview with them, but I definitely want to be able to do more, and that's also why I sought out here as well, because I want to be able to do more on different platforms. I want to be able to share
my story and be able to provide education. I enjoy writing. I would love to write a book. I would love to be able to just really just share as much as I can.
Okay. I was going to ask you too, where do you think you are as far as therapy? Do you think you're nearing closure, which closure is where, you know, you don't have the dreams anymore. You don't have, this doesn't come up in your, you know, in, like run as a tape in your head. You know what I'm saying? To where it
yeah.
takes up too much time. Have you gotten past it to some degree?
I would say, and I guess some people say a time heals all wounds. I don't believe in it. I really don't believe in that because it's been a very, very, it was a very complicated relationship. And unfortunately, it came to points where because he started off being like, I mean, a teacher first, a principal first, but he became more like a dad to me. That was all part of the whole plan. But I saw he was he's the closest dad I have ever known. So I just still view him as that. I'm still trying to separate how I'm still trying to connect how he was the abuser. But in my mind, it's like I keep him separated. Like this person was the abuser, this person was my dad, or two different people. So unfortunately, there has been times after the whole thing of speaking out, the lawsuit, and we have spoken for a period of months. And maybe even like a year and a half ago, I remember there was communication. And before a period of time, his wife was also aware of it for a while as well. And there was different, I can get into that as well. But sometimes I truly miss him because I still see him as my dad. I'm still trying to figure out the person who I knew was not really the right person, was not the reason.
Let me tell you this. It wasn't until in my 50s that I could first, get my master's in social work. And I had an internship. And it was at a psych internship. It was at a state hospital in psych. And my supervisor knew something was wrong with me because it started coming back up again at 50, okay? And so, so that's when I told her what had happened to me so long ago, and she said, call the police. So I called the police, and that's when it opened back up, and he actually went in and confessed about what he did to the police, which opened up a civil lawsuit. But I'm telling you, it takes a long time. It takes a long time and a lot of fear to, you know, find that time. But, That supervisor, the one thing that she said to me that never left was every child that was abused that she ever worked with or every adult, they always still love their abuser.
Well, say with the last part again, they always feel like what?
They always feel they never stop loving their abuser because there's a certain amount of trust. You have to trust them at some point. You know, it's like Stockholm syndrome.
Yep. Yeah.
Grooming.
Yes.
Some of them are very good at grooming. Thanks, Kim. Okay, I'm going to just check in with Thomasine in Maryland and see if she wants to still listen or talk. Thomasine, did you want to just listen?
Yes, I do. It's a very interesting story. And
okay.
I'm so sorry she had to go through that.
Sure. Would you like
to
come back to you, or you just want to stay listening?
I think I'll just listen.
Okay. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll get back to your story and take it away.
Okay, so after when I did speak out and everything, when the whole newspaper went out and it being on the internet, it became very difficult. I was starting to regret the decision of asking for help
in the beginning with, because
uh-huh.
people were contacting me, asking me, how come you were sleeping with him? Were you really sleeping with him? And those were the questions. Uh-huh. It's like, did you not read what the interview said? It's like, I would not say I was sleeping with him. This is, I was abused, how he took my virginity
right.
away. I was
just for you.
Something which I was trying to do. But I lost many friends. I lost many high school friends, even college friends, and I did not want to go back to the area, Michigan area, after, because I felt like everybody knew, which is true, because a lot of people knew what was happening because it was all over the internet and the newspapers. So I just felt completely excluded. I couldn't be around anyone at all, and lost everyone. So I felt completely alone. Even during the process of speaking out, I just still felt completely alone. My mom was there. I was not really trying to share too much stuff with her either, because I was like, it just felt embarrassing, and I just could not believe. It's kind of like I was on autopilot talking to the different the cops all the time. I felt like it was just completely an autopilot, and the lawyers just going by the actions. That was very embarrassing, because I was still trying to figure out, because somebody who we used to talk to literally every single day, and then now we cannot even speak. And I remember, like, a couple of years after this took place and speaking, I didn't talk to him for several years, but then a few years ago, maybe about a year and a half ago or so, I think it was maybe 2 years before that, I contacted him. It was during some hurricane in Florida that was taking place. And maybe it was Hurricane Irma, I think it was. And I looked on Facebook and I saw that he moved to Florida. And I was like, I sent him a text. I didn't know if it was his number still, but I just still tried. And it was. And I did not say who it was. I just said, are you and your family okay? And then he was like, well, who is this? Well, he didn't ask who was this, because he just said, yeah, we're doing fine. And then after I spoke to him, we started communicating. He was like saying he wanted to be able to talk to me all this time. He just wanted to get me in the room when he found out this stuff and talk to me. He just knew once he talked to me, then nothing would happen. Nothing happened to him, because I didn't press, no civil suit took place with him. He didn't go to jail. Nothing happened to him. He just stopped teaching. He still has his teaching license. He's able to. He said he chooses not to, because he does not want people to find out anything. But he said that's the only reason. His wife is a teacher. He's also a teacher. So now he just does other types of jobs to make money and stuff like that. But I remember when we were talking as well for a bit, he was saying to me, he asked me, would I ever write a letter or write some kind of a statement saying that the both of us just had like a consensual relationship and he is fine to be able to teach. And I was like, why would you even ask me that question? Don't you understand what you did? It was abuse. My life had completely been messed up. He did not understand any of that. He would say he's sorry, but it was not a genuine apology. He was more so than asking, you know what? Yes, I did this, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I did this, but fine. Okay. I thought you wanted. I'm like, I did not want this. I was underage, even that in itself. And you being married, having family, but he didn't understand it. And I know for a fact he didn't, because he was still trying to meet up with me to do it again. I mean, that was very clear. He was telling me he would like to be able to meet up with me, even just the both of us alone, for us to be able to talk, for us to be able to get to the bottom of this, for us to be able to have closure. He said he wanted us to meet up. We meet up halfway at some park area, some public place, for us to talk. And he was saying, and then he was telling me what he would do to me, like physically, how he would abuse me. So hearing that in my mind, I'm like, okay, he does not understand what he did. The only thing he sees wrong with it is him having an affair. That's the only issue that he sees wrong with it whatsoever. And that's also why I'm just, in my mind, it's like I want to do more, because it's like maybe if something else took place, maybe he would understand what he really did. But like now nothing is happening, he doesn't understand it. Plus the times he was blaming me for how him and the family are having financial problems. And I'm like, because he's not able to work as a teacher anymore. And I'm like, by me speaking out, for me speaking out, I'm not responsible for your financial problems. You are the one who did it. But he doesn't understand any of that. So he doesn't see what he did wrong. Remember, he would talk about the kids, and I'll ask about the kids, because that was my main concern. I was really considering just how the lady was asking about how has it been later on. It has been very emotional, because sometimes I would truly miss him, and many times I would want to connect back with him because for the children. Mm-hmm. Because I saw we were even talking, him was even talking about saying, yeah, we just have to try to get his wife to be supportive, to just be friends with me. So he would tell me to text the wife. A couple of me last year, he would tell me, or maybe 2 years ago, year and a half, tell me to text the wife, to her to be able to talk to me, her be able to trust me, to feel comfortable with me again, so all of us have a relationship together, so it won't just be me and him. So for a while, I didn't really do anything, but then I chose to. I chose to do that. I don't really have an issue with her, because I felt like over time I found some kind of issue, but I felt like she also suspected. She also could have done more as well, but she didn't. I was trying to text the wife as well, try to be friends, but my main purpose of that was because I wanted to get close to the children, because I wanted to be able to be friends with them, to be able for me to be able to see, okay, so how are you doing? Is everything okay? Like, what is really going on? That was my main thing, because they were only living like an hour and 45 minutes away from me during that time. I know the address, because when I was trying to report it again when I was in Florida due to the whole thing that happened in Disney World, but due to statute of limitations, the officer, the detective, gave me the address. So I was able to check on GPS, and I saw like an hour and 45 minutes. So we were even talking about plans for me to go and pick up the kids sometimes, to go and take them out. And he told me that the children know about what took place between him and I. And I was like, they know?
What?
And it was like, well, they're coming to the aid. They found it on the internet, because it's still on the internet. He said, yeah, they found it on the internet. And I was like, huh, did they ever say anything to you? It was like, no, I really didn't say anything. And then he said he asked the daughter, would she ever want to see me again? And he told me she said yes. And we were very close. He told me also that his daughter has a picture of the both of us near her bed. And she sleeps with her near her bed. And she'll be 17 in a few months. So it's like when I hear stuff like that, it's like, what if I did not do enough? Because I remember telling them, the kids like truly adored me, both of them. So I remember telling them, I will always be here for you. We're family. I will always be here. You can always talk to me. And that was always my intention, because I never planned to tell this secret until my grave. I never, ever planned. I felt like I let them down, because I did not really try to exhaust all of my options. I feel like I did enough. Not really enough, but just during the whole time when I spoke out, because it kind of was just like forced upon me in a sense. But that's the only time I actually really thought anything, because I tried to do stuff maybe twice after, but my parents and my family, they did not support. They were saying, "No, what? Just let it be. Just let it be. It is just now. It's now in the past. Just forget it. Just forget it. Just move on. Just focus on your life." And I'm like, how I can't focus on my life? It was literally in my mind every single day. Not a day I think about that this happens, because my life would not be how it is if all of this is not happening. I still have his number memorized. I still have passwords memorized that he's given me. I see him as my dad. And it's like people can find it to be so weird, but it's like that close connection.
It's not weird.
Person.
And you have a connection that it's very hard to describe, but once that was revealed and you regretted it immediately, because you knew that the relationship would never ever be the same,
And even though it was exposed, you still loved the man. You still loved the family.
Yeah.
It was your family. And you just don't drop, people don't understand that you can't just separate it out. You still have that love. And it's very confusing for the abused person.
It is. It is extremely, extremely confusing. It just led me to points of cutting myself and having suicidal thoughts over the years, even especially certain times of the year, because I was saying earlier about the little anniversary time. It's in June, so usually around May, around June, and then it kind of goes away around like July time. It's usually around December. It's like typically the worst time of the year. And my body just physically, my mind just knows that time is coming, because I remember around May I started to get very depressed. I just felt like, okay, life is just not worth living. It's just at no point. And I remember looking at the date and actually paying attention. I was like, why am I feeling this way? And then I remember I was like, almost June. It just, my mind just automatically just knows when that time is. And I've made a promise to myself. I'm like, I don't want to cut myself again, because I'm not like trying to kill myself when I did, but it's kind of like a release. It's kind of like you just want to get that pain out. And I guess sometimes I really miss him, but I've not been able to cut myself in about a year and a half. So I'm so happy and grateful for that, of not doing that. I've just been able to, over time, I'm just learning different resources, because no day ever gets easier. It's not a day that goes by that I don't think of him. I mean, it's always on my mind. There's always something that comes into my mind every single day. Sometimes it's negative thoughts, sometimes it's positive, because there are different stuff that he did teach me that is very useful for life in general as well. But there's also different things that I learned from him, and the mindset and everything that is completely toxic. But my mind is just always there, and it's like still trying to battle of, okay, what's real? This was actually the real person. This is really who he is. And it's like, okay, if I don't use my experience to help anybody, then it's like I don't see a point to be able to be here, to be living. That's what my mind goes to sometimes. So it's like I have a burden to be able to help others, I guess.
And you're doing that.
I was not able to help. Yeah, that's why I was like, okay, let me try to find. It's actually my therapist actually recommended me here. When I was doing therapy when I was in Florida, maybe last year, that's how I first found out about it. But I would like to go back to therapy, because I feel like sometimes I need it. Because it's still a difficult time, doesn't heal all wounds for me personally. But
So we're gonna go to the panel one more time. But you are doing so good, and you know what you just said for the listeners is that girl out there that is still suffering and wants to cut right now, or wants to go binge, or wants to go. Whatever it is that they want to do to numb that pain or get rid of that pain, you're telling them they don't have to do that one more time. So let's go to Joe in Oregon, my co-host.
Thank you. Actually, that leads into what I was going to say. I think making the promise to yourself is such a big thing, to promise not to do that again. That is such, that's almost like a sacred promise to yourself. And I'm glad that you said that you could do that. And that will override, I would think, any, sort of dips in the, as things go along, it'll keep you from really sliding all the way back down because of the promise that you made yourself. And I'm very happy to hear that that you did that and that you're keeping that promise. That's so healing. That is great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, we're going to go to Pamela.
Okay, I know your name.
Raquel.
Yeah. Raquel, you said you went to college, right?
Yes, I did not graduate. I have my associate's, but I did not graduate.
You got your associate's in nursing?
No, not in nursing. This whole thing switched degrees so many times. I started off wanting to be a teacher, but felt people would look at me as the abuser, like with him. So I changed that. I went into, I have my associate's in accounting. So that's what I have done, but I'm not really passionate about it. I'm more so like trying to do advocate work or do my own personal entrepreneurship.
Oh, awesome. I went ahead and got my master's in social work and from Southern University in New Orleans. And so I've written a book and I've written an actual client workbook for, you know, therapists to work with their clients. I'm not a therapist myself. I just have my MSW. I didn't go for my licensed clinical social work. But I just want to encourage you to continue with a therapist and find the right one, okay? You'll know if you have the right one because you won't be able to step back from
them.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that'll lead you out of the bubble of, you know, you'll understand that you just love people. You love your abuser just like you love all people, right? He's not
exactly
any more special than anybody else. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, just to break those tape that goes through your head constantly about, you know, different things, just renew your mind with positive things, you know? That'll help break that negativity. And just find the positive. Yeah, find the positives that help other. But I wanted to ask you, did you find out at all whether he had molested any of his children?
No, he denied. He also denied with me. They said that they have tried. I don't know how deep their investigation was, but he denied doing. They weren't able to find any other students, nothing with their children. I don't think they ever really sought out to see if he did anything with his children, but he denied everything with me, so I'm sure he would deny everything else.
Mm-hmm.
When she becomes of age and gets to the age that she can tell, you know, she'd probably come forward. When did he move to Florida?
Shortly after I spoke out, he moved to Indiana. First, I want to say I spoke out about in 2012, 2013. So I want to say 2013, maybe around the end of 2013, 14, he moved to Indiana. Then 2016, he moved to Florida. That's where he is still.
And you know what state he's in, I mean, what city he's in and everything, right?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Have you called the Florida police in the place where he lives to tell of his abuse to you?
No, I didn't know I could do that, really.
Of course you can. You call down to where he lives, talk to the police, and tell them, and even, you know, show them how they can get the internet, pull the internet up about it. Because they need to know that there's, they need to know there's an abuser there.
They
don't stop abusing, okay? They never stop, these pedophiles. He'll be grooming somebody else,
that's
true. That's true. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. Okay, we're going to go to Bailey in Florida. Hi, Bailey.
Hi, everybody. First of all, your story's fascinating. I mean, you're incredible. I'm sitting here for the last, I don't know, when you guys started listening, and my 16-year-old is like, let me see what you're listening to. So I let him read your bio, and he's like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So I said, I have to call in, and first of all, if he's teaching down here in Florida, you should let the schools know. The police down here are horrible. You have to give them proof. But I would call the schools, and I would tell the schools, this is what this guy did to me, and it's on your shoulders. That's number one. Number two, obviously, you've learned a lot of coping skills, because I could see what you wrote, and I could hear it. And I had a child that had a breakdown for other reasons, and learning coping skills is what gets you through the very difficult times. So keep on, every time you have a bad time or a bad moment, go back to those coping skills, because that's what's going to get you through. It's going to get you stronger and stronger. Now, these kind of things never go away. They fade. Time, but obviously sharing your story. I've shared my story on NASCA. I'm part of the NASCA family, and sharing your story is and bringing awareness is definitely part of the healing process. But again, keep with the therapy and keep on going with the coping skills, because that's what will get you stronger. And again, call, if you know what school he's teaching in, because that you could probably find out by Googling. I would
Told me he's not teaching. I don't know if I can really believe it, but last time I spoke to him,
Why are you in contact with him?
That was a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
That was a few years ago when he told me that.
I wouldn't believe anything he says, but Google him, find him on social media, and find out where, because you will save more children that way versus going to the police. I mean, you could try. I just know that my experience with the police down here has not been very successful. I know they're being trained, but, you know, with COVID and everything, everything's been delayed. But keep speaking out your story. I'm not sure if you're allowed to use his name because of defamation. But if you do have a lawsuit against him, that part I missed. You obviously can't use his name, but you can. It's your responsibility if he is teaching or working with kids to let them know what he did to you. And it's on the on whoever is hiring him or has him employed. It's on their shoulders.
Yeah.
Now, if he gets if you go to court and he gets charged, then you can go to the police. I don't know. I know with my situation, I know the police down here, they're not so great, but. You know, you could try. But nothing hurts to try. You have to have some sort of proof. So,
okay.
I wish you the best of
luck. Thanks,
Billy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we only have about 15 minutes left, and I do want to go to the panel one more time. So why don't you take the next 10 minutes and finish up where you want to go, what you want the listeners to know about you, and basically the end of your story.
Okay. Well, it has definitely been a journey. Still, I'm not going to say I am completely healed. I don't believe that at all. It's definitely, I think as time goes, I'm just learning more coping skills. And for me, it's like how I said, not able to cut since about a year and a half. So it's like when I look back and it's when I have a temptation, like I don't want to just go do this right now or go do this right now. I just don't want to be alive right now. I look back at that time frame like, wow, well, a year and a half, I was able to get through that year, those years, and even get through when I did I'm sure I'll be able to continue to get through this next day. Because sometimes so difficult, I can only focus on just the next day to help me to get through just this day. So I just learned different coping skills to be able to move forward. And it's still, I'm still processing what took place, separating who he is. I do definitely believe in therapy and finding the right person for therapy, because I have had a therapist that I not felt worse coming out than when I did. But I also have, like, my most recent one, who was in Florida a couple of years ago, and I actually was receiving support from it. He was giving me different kind of coping mechanisms to be able to use, and even brought me here as well. So I am grateful for that. And I don't believe it is good to be in contact with the abuser at all. I think when I did so, it came to around that time of the year, and that's when there was communication. And then I recognized I was once again being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the decision to cut that relationship off. I remember one time he called me and I asked him, "Why are you calling?" Because I already made it clear, I was like, I don't want to have any more communication. Because literally every single time when we would come off the phone, I would feel super depressed. And I was like, I can't continue to have this to continue to go. And I remember I said, okay, you know what? We just can't talk anymore because it's not helping anything whatsoever. It's just making things worse. You're not understanding what you did, and we're not getting anywhere. I remember he called me one day. And he said, I said, how come you're calling me? Then he said, because I'm sad, talking about himself. And I was like, I was very proud of myself. I said, well, I'm not a person to just go contact when you're sad. You need to go contact somebody else. And then I said, we can't speak anymore. So I changed my phone number. He doesn't have my number anymore. So I'm grateful for that. Sometimes it's like I do have a temptation of, okay, I want a day to connect.
Sure.
But it's more so the mindset of me looking at him as my dad, not as the abuser,
mm-hmm.
because he was the closest person, like, to me. So in that kind of mindset, but just, and also me thinking about his children, but I'm just trying to accept that I can only do as much as I can do, even if I don't have other support, even my family support, I still have to do what I know I need to do. And that's why I chose to do this. This is why I chose to really strive to be an advocate as well, and just try to seek out different kind of opportunities to be able to help people to know that even if you're at your worst, your complete worst, when you don't want to be alive, when you don't want to wake up the next day, when you don't know what tomorrow's going to hold outside of just complete negativity, it's like there is still some type of hope. There's still a ray of light. And that's really the driving force why I wanted to share with other people, because it's like so many people are hurting, especially now when this whole COVID is happening and so many people are being abused in their homes and people are being sent to maybe family members, friends' homes, and they're being abused even by partners, whoever it is. And it's so difficult. So I wanted to help other people to know that there's still a ray of light even in the midst of the storm. You may not be able to recognize it at that moment, but it's still there. So continue to just hold on and just make that choice. Just make that choice that day to, you know what, I'm going to do this. Make a schedule. Stuff has helped me to make a schedule, to have different kind of goals for me to be able to try to accomplish different things. I may not accomplish everything how I would like or in the time frame, but I'm like, okay, there's a purpose of why I'm alive. I could have died in all of this. Times when I thought I was pregnant during this as well.
Wow.
I remember I was telling him, I feel like I'm actually, he took my virginity away. So I never knew anything about any of this kind of stuff, being raped, nothing. I remember going to him, I was like, I feel like I'm pregnant. And he was like saying, no, you're not pregnant, you're not pregnant. But what I found out later, shortly after when he actually started to rape me, was that he had a vasectomy. So that's how I was able to get pregnant. In my mind, I was like, this is why he was able to get away with it as well, because he can't really impregnate anyone. But I just still felt I was pregnant, because there's still like a low percentage that you can still have a child. get someone pregnant. So I took a pregnancy. It took me to get a pregnancy test. It was during high school. It took me to get a pregnancy test. It came out negative. He believed it would be negative. But that was such a scary thing for me, even sometimes not knowing if I was going to make it home, because my parents, sometimes they had no idea where I was. They just knew I was with him, but they did not know, or they knew I was with family. So just today to see how it could have been so much worse. So it's like, no matter how bad someone's situation may be, it can truly be so much worse. And I'm just so grateful that I am alive, because even if it's just for the simple, not as simple, it's a huge thing, but even if it's just to be able to share how people can still get through such a terrible situation, then that is it. And that's why I told like, I can't commit suicide, because I have to be able to share this with other people. That is still a ray of light. You can still have hope and just get through. Sometimes it feels like hell, literally, but you can still just get through. Just still just work. Just work. And then when you do, you'll be stronger coming out of it.
And you're not alone, right? You got a family here. No. You're part of the family now.
Yes. Yes.
So tell people how they can find you and what organization you're associated with as well.
Yes, the Hope of Survivors. The Hope of Survivors, it is called. And I'm on Facebook. You type in Raquel Malice. I'm right there on Facebook as well. Can definitely be contacted there. So, yeah.
Wonderful. All right, we're going to go to the panel one more time. We have about 8 minutes left. So, and then I'm going to give you the final word to the listeners. So let's go to Joe, my sweet co-host in Oregon, if I can hit my button.
Thank you. Thank you, Raquel, for being here. I think you're helping a lot of people who have carry guilt or shame or something. And you've told it in such a perfect way that they can identify with it and also see how the story can be changed and how to give themselves a break. And I think that's perfect. You're doing a great service there. And I've been a long time in recovery, and I just think may never get there, but it gets better and better every day. And that's what I'm aiming for. So thank you for being
here.
You. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, we're going to go to Pam in Louisiana.
Raquel?
Yeah.
You did a great job. You did a great job. Welcome to the family. I'm the Alabama ambassador. I'm the Alabama ambassador. And if you want to call me at any time, just click under NASCA ambassadors, and I'm under Alabama, and you can call and talk to me.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I saw you on Facebook. You're a lovely girl.
Aw, thank you so much.
Don't let your past define you. Your past does not define you. You define you.
Yes. Thank you.
Amen. Amen. Okay, and last but not least, Bailey in Florida.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm looking for you on Facebook, because I do the NASCA social media, so I like to know who everybody is. Are you the one that says Peterson Warren Academy?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm Bailey Smith, and I'm sending you a friend request.
Okay, sounds good.
And if you want to be tagged, whenever we have a show, which is every night, I tag whoever I recognize is part of NASCA. So if you want to be tagged, I could tag you every night when we have a show, so we can remember to come on or listen or call in.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, that'd be great.
And I'm wishing the best of luck. You'll get through this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bailey. And I'm just going to see if Thomasina in Maryland wants to say goodnight. Did you want to say goodnight, Thomasine?
No.
Okay.
I'm glad she told her story. She's very brave, and she did a wonderful job.
Thank you so much.
And
thank you.
Thank you for being on the panel. We really appreciate it. Okay, we have
about four minutes
left. So what would you like the listeners to know? Because you did a tremendous job, and this idea of grooming and in a Christian setting, any religious setting really, where children are just thought to be, okay, they're in a religious setting, it's safe. It's not. It can happen anywhere, any place, anytime. So what do you want the listeners to know?
When you feel like there is something wrong, when you just have a feeling in your stomach, intuition, like there's just something that is not right, just please trust it. Just try to do something. Just try to seek someone out. Try to investigate a bit more, because people are going to do things in the dark. The abusers don't want people to know what is happening, and there are so many victims who are scared. Even if they say no, nothing is fine, but you still, everything is fine, but you still have that feeling, still try to do something, seek something out, and try to learn a little bit more and be of support to them. And just know that as time goes, as days go, things are going to be difficult, but we can't give up. We can't give up, because many victims feel like they are completely alone. And there's not any two stories that are alike, but many victims feel like they don't have anyone, that they are alone. But yet, there are so many victims all over this world, but they just feel completely in darkness. So we have to be able to help to provide support, help people to feel more comfortable, to be able to speak out, and to know that their story is going to be believed. They can't just be a blame, because they're already feeling so much guilt already. But then to actually have to hear other people not believe them, to question them, and to make them seem as if their life does not matter. It's ridiculous. Like, so many people are dying, they're killing themselves, they're going to self-harm because they're so sad, they're so scared. But we have to remember the change that we wish to see in the world. If we see other people who are not being supportive, we're always talking about everybody else, how come they didn't do this, how come they didn't do it, well, what are we doing? What am I doing with my voice? So what are we doing with our resources, with our knowledge to help someone else? So we have to be able to just try to see what can I do, because if we look about it for everybody else, then it's going to happen. But we have to take responsibility in our own hand and be loving, to be supportive, to provide education, because there's a lack of education on these topics. The lack of it. So many people are not. But there's a ray of light. There's still a ray of light. There is still hope. And time will, in time, you are able to learn more coping skills, and to learn more, to know, okay, well, I was able to get through one day, I can get through another. I made it through a week, I can get it through a month. I made it through a month, I can get through a year, 2 years, 5 years. But we need to stay strong.
That inspiration, Raquel, that inspiration is what we need. And thank you so much for telling your story. You did a fantastic job. And I hope people listening will understand grooming, will understand the need. If you see something and your gut's telling you it's wrong, report it. Say something. Talk to the people. And we thank you so much, Raquel Millett from Westland, Michigan. And thank you all.
Thank you.
I am Linda Vitti from New Jersey, a counselor, advocate, and life coach. And we say good night and God bless. Thanks so much.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Talk Radio.